This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Danger! Danger!
It's not a lineup, it's not an army, it's not a stable, and it's not a family. It's an alliance of businessmen.
Take it right.
Place to Be Nation, you're listening to the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast, featuring a different way to look at and debate the history of wrestling. And now, your co-host, the PTBN PWO two-man power trip, JT and Will.
The Dangerous Alliance would rather die than surrender to you.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to episode 5 of the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts here, JT, and of course with me as always is my good friend Will from Texas. Will, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. I'm happy to be here. I'm always excited to be a part of the Dangerous Alliance.
Love it. Every couple weeks we're back, and I look forward to it quite a bit as well. So, and with us, of course, is our third man in the booth. I was with him all weekend here. Drank. We played some wiffle ball. We played some unnamed pool ball game that was fun. Watched a battleground. Had some wings. And now we're talking yet again after spending like 36 consecutive hours with each other. And it's Dan McGinn. Dan, how are you?
Yes, the McG1 climax occurred over the weekend, yes. From what I gather. But I'm sunburned. I'm sore, but in perfect shape for this show.
Very good. All you gotta do is click a mouse and talk. So as long as you can handle those two tasks. We're good. And Dan, we watched a lot of the network while you were here, and of course, for $10 a month. And, you know, we watched Battleground last night. If you haven't heard it yet, the PTBN reaction show, led by my good buddy Will, went up this morning. And it was a get the F in marathon. I think he was getting it out of his system before having to come on with this show here tonight, Will.
Is that true? Man. Yeah, man. I think they're all out of my system. I just have to say one quick thing. If WWE continues to end their pay-per-view special events like that month after month, I propose that you don't pay for a month of the network, that you pay for a month of NWA Classics, because I will be subscribing to that for sure. So I don't want to get out that. I hope everybody listens to the interview that my buddy Pete from the Titans did with Bruce Tharp, who's releasing all of this classic Houston footage from the 70s and 80s. And so you might have to, if you lose, JR, I might lose, but I might have to buy you a month of NWA Classics instead of the network, because
okay,
that show last night upset me so much.
We could do that. And of course, there were a couple interviews with him, with Bruce on the site. The first one, of course, was the original time he was on, where they talked all about the NWA Classics. Then they had him on again with Kevin Sullivan as well to both talk about NWA Classics and some other topics. And I heard Kevin had some interesting things to say about Parv on the show. So we'll refer you to that. Check that out. A lot of audio dropped in addition to the Battleground Rewind today. Back on Monday, also had the Place to Be Podcast episode 378. Scott and I looking at Survivor Series 2004. Not as many F-bombs as you might expect in that one, Will. That show was actually a tad better on the rewatch we did.
Oh, yes.
Compared to early on. And a new wrestling culture podcast as well, Dylan and Dave, with an interview with Jimmy Rave, one of the great wrestlers currently active out there in the indie circuit. So they talked to Jimmy. Had him on the wrestling culture. This Week in Wrestling, of course, had their edition for July 18th. Pete, Steven, and Johnny looked at the week of wrestling that was. We have our Tough Enough episode 4 review. Of course, episode 3 blew up Twitter with, was it Gabby or Gigi? I don't know, one of the women. Who was it, Dan? Do you remember?
It was Georgia.
That's Gigi, right?
Yeah, I believe
so. So Georgia got pissed off at Jordan Duncan's take. Actually, it was Jordan Duncan's son, Isaac. Isaac Duncan. Who took some shots at Georgia, and she got pissed off when it was flipping out on an 8-year-old. But, and also be sure to check out the main event, Scott and Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, and Glenn Butler. Talked a little bit about Battleground, but also broke down WWE.com's top 10 matches of the half year article from their website. So be sure to check that out. So PlaySpanish.com, lots of audio dropping this week in addition to our show here. And Dan McGinn, I'm going to take a breath because I want you, sir, to tell us what is game number one.
Fellas, stipulation one is called Dream Matches, and not necessarily American Dream Matches, but maybe yes, maybe no. What are some of your dream matches? Guys, take it away.
I don't think Will's given us the okay to talk about Dusty Rhodes yet. He still put the moratorium on, so you know what? Not American Dream Matches. Even though we have a very Dusty-themed game, I heard Dan slip me a note earlier today when he was here about what the games could be that he's choosing. But so Dream Matches, what we're going to do is we're just going to take turns throwing out different matches that never happened. And it could actually be a match that technically happened, but we may want to use the guys in a different time period in their lives. So for an example, Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant happened in 1980, happened in 1987, 88, probably 89 somewhere. But you may say, you know what? I want 85 Hogan at his peak, and I want 77 Andre. So, I mean, that's a match that happened, but not at the guys in the years that you want to say that you want to use them. Make sense?
Perfect sense.
And then the other option is two guys that never had the opportunity to fight. You know, you may pick, you may pick Isaac Yankum, you know, or something crazy like that.
Isaac Yankum versus Billy Robinson.
There you go. Scott had a really funny one. I can't remember what it was when he was here earlier when I told him about the game. And I was vamping there to try and remember what the heck he said it was. But now, I remember we were laughing about it. But anyway, so we're going to talk about what the match would be. We're going to say why we'd like to choose those guys. We may talk a little bit about the feud that led up to it, or at least the build, why they're fighting, and then and what the results would be. So why don't we go ahead and get that started, Will? I think you want to – why don't you kick us off here?
All right, I got one. And you just mentioned his name, Andre the Giant. I am going to take 1981 Andre the Giant versus a man that – was on this week's WWE pay-per-view. We're going to take modern-day Brock Lesnar versus 1981 Andre the Giant. And if most people think of Andre, they're going to think of broken down, immobile, slow Andre from the late 80s. Andre the Giant, at his peak in the 70s and early 80s, was fast on his feet. He had a great, credible offense, and there's a really famous match from 1981 between Andre and Stan Hansen where they just beat the living daylights out of each other. It is a brawl, it is a war, and it's a pretty famous match that happened in Japan. And you take today, you take Brock Lesnar, like could you imagine Brock Lesnar trying to take Andre the Giant over in a German suplex or trying to lift him up for an F5? I mean, we've seen him do it to the Big Show, but could you see him doing it to Andre? So to me, this is one of those Clash of the Titan matches where if JR, you agree or disagree with me, I mean, it's up to you. Wouldn't you say that Brock Lesnar, at least for the next month, he's one of the very few people in WWE where his presence, his aura is kind of larger than life?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And then you put that against Andre the Giant, whose entire career has been kind of larger than life.
Yep.
I think you're going to have a Clash of the Titans. And, you know, young Andre wasn't afraid to bleed or bust people open.
No,
modern day Brock Lesnar, not afraid to bleed, not afraid to bust people open the hard way. Well, I think these guys would be black and blue at the end of this match.
I mean, you think, too, when you talk about Brock Lesnar being a larger than life, don't you also think he's the type of guy where if the system called for it nowadays, territories where you could travel around and make good money wherever you went, I mean, that seems like something he would do in a heartbeat, right? He would go to
Absolutely.
Japan or go to Canada or go to Texas or go to Portland, you know, wherever the money is, stay there for 6 months, have a hot run, and he's got no ego. He'll put guys over or he'll dominate and then leave and go to the next town. So I think it fits on many levels, these two guys. I think Brock in many ways is the modern day Andre from that point of view.
That's actually a pretty good point. I mean, obviously not in stature, but in terms of presence, absolutely. I mean, he's the only person really on the roster right now, and it's about to change, but he's the only one on the roster right now that I really care about every match he's in.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. Well, maybe. That might end in August, but it's...
That's what I said. For the time being, you know, for the time being, he's the only one where if he's on the card, I'm sold. Let me buy a ticket. And I think that him versus Andre would be amazing. I think it would be much better than the Brock versus Big Show matches that took place, because I think Andre at his peak was so much better than the Big Show at his peak. And I like Big Show. I'm kind of one of those guys who actually thinks Big Show can work a good match with the right opponent.
Well, but, and Big Show's peak is kind of split, right? Big Show has his physical peak, and then he has his, like, worker's peak. You know, his worker peak is more recent when he's... You know, maybe as recent as what, like the Jericho era, where he could, where he really started to develop.
The Floyd Mayweather era, when him and Mark Henry were fighting in 2011 during the, what was it, the Hall of Pain tour?
Yes, yeah, where Daniel Bryan was involved, all that stuff.
So
that was 11, I think it was 11 into 12. So, I mean, that was really good stuff. And that was his worker, you know, smart worker, knows how to work a match, could get good matches out of guys. And then his physical peak, you would say, is probably more like 96, 97, right, when he first started as a giant.
But he was so green then, that wouldn't matter. So
right.
And then you remember him and Lesnar had a feud in 2002, 2003. And so he's kind of the only guy who's as huge as Andre that you compare it to.
Yep.
But Andre... I know people want to dismiss his stuff because they're used to slow Andre, who had a bad back and could barely get to the ring, because that's what people remember from their youth. The guy could go, man. Mm-hmm. I really implore you to look for early Andre, because he was amazing in the ring. He really was. Like, he wasn't all gimmick when he was doing those special tours, and he was a special event in the territories. He wasn't just all gimmick. He was a pretty great worker as well.
One of my favorite clips is the one where he does the butt splash off the cage to Kamala. It was like out of nowhere.
Yeah, that was later on too. Right, that wasn't even.
That was a little bit later. So what would you make the build to this? Like, when is it happening? Or either guy, is it – obviously, I don't think we need gold on the line in this one. Is we have Heyman on the mic versus Bobby Heenan? Does he come in early and grab early Andre? Like, what are you picturing
it
being?
Well, this is going to be a face Andre. It has to be a face Andre, because Bobby Heenan's not in the picture yet. But you basically have Heyman come in, talk about Brock Lesnar being the beast, how he's the only one who can conquer the giant. Whatever. I mean, Heyman's going to make up something that's awesome anyway. You can build it around the fact that maybe Lesnar comes in and body slams Andre with ease, mm-hmm, before there's even a match. And so now it's not about whether he can be body slammed. It's about whether Brock can get him up for the F5. And then Andre saying, look, I'm still a giant, you know, in his French voice or whatever, and basically just putting those big paws around Brock's neck. Because if you've ever seen Brock Lesnar in UFC and he puts his mitt on like an opponent's face, his hand covers the entire opponent, you know, like that's going to be Andre's hand on Brock's face. I mean, Andre was huge. And so then you're going to cast doubt on who's going to win. Is it going to be Andre, who's at his physical peak, who's, you know, at the time, like, was very protected? Or is it going to be Brock, who has a habit of destroying monsters? I don't know. I think it'd be a fascinating match. What's your first match, bud?
All right, so I have four guys in my head, and I'm throwing them around to different scenarios, because I think they'd all be fun. So I'm actually going to do a fatal four-way, and this match is going to go, like, 45 minutes, and it's going to be four of my favorite guys that work similar styles but very different styles. And they're four guys who I've always wanted to see match up in different ways. So I'm not going to break them into separate fights, because I think they can all blend together nicely. So I am taking 1994 Bret Hart, my favorite year of Bret Hart, in the ring. So I think 97 is my favorite Bret Hart character-wise, but I love Bret in 94. Some of the matches he had as champion, really the year they gave him the keys to the car and let him drive a bit. He had the Owen matches. He had the Backlund match, the 1-2-3 Kid. He had really good match with Diesel at King of the Ring. So this is
Yokozuna and Bret was hot.
Yep, and even the Quebecers tag at the Rumble. He had this match with the Steiners. The Steiners was the Hart brothers. So really great in-ring Bret Hart. So he's my first guy, and he's my champion going into this match. He is facing off with 2002 Kurt Angle. He's a match I've always wanted to see. Those two guys go at it. I always think back to Bret Hart. He used to talk about how he wishes he could have hung around long enough to have a match with Kurt Angle. And to me, 02 Angle is probably my favorite year of Angle in ring-wise. Maybe not character-wise, but in ring-wise.
And JR, you know, they always say, you know, the criticism with Angle is that he doesn't know how to rein it in. He's right. A go-go-go type of wrestler. Bret Hart's going to rein in Kurt Angle. I could see that being a really great match, actually, where you have Bret controlling the tempo, Angle bringing the flavor. Yeah, I like that matchup.
So now I'm adding my third guy in, and that's 2000 and, I don't know. I'll let you pick the year for this one, Will, because I'm having a hard time between maybe 11, 12, 13, CM Punk, a guy that I always wanted to see have a match with Bret Hart. I think they're very similar. I used to say a lot at the time that I think Punk in his run as the year-long champion was almost like a modern-day Bret Hart, wrestling multi-matches on the show, you know, a steady face leading the program, but not a guy that they always fully committed to, but it would always go back to when they needed to, a guy that was outspoken backstage. They seemed very similar to me. Size-wise, they both
interesting. Yeah,
they both wrestled a similar style as far as they had their set, you know, finishing sequence of moves and really good sellers. And to me, there's very always screamed to be similar during those couple years. I'll probably say like 2012 Punk, the year that he had the long reign when he was the main face on the program. He had the matches with Daniel Bryan and all that stuff.
Okay, and who's the fourth guy?
All right, so my fourth guy is. Maybe not something you would expect me to say, but always one of my kind of guilty pleasure favorites and a guy I always wanted to see have a match with Kurt Angle. And it's an obvious reason why, because they share a move. And that is 1998 Ken Shamrock. a huge Ken Shamrock fan. Huge Ken
Shamrock
fan.
Oh, man. Right? Man, you just dropped that match by like 2 stars.
No, listen. Oh, because listen to look at the guys that can carry him, right? He doesn't have to do much. He can be the guy that gets knocked out like 5 minutes in and then comes back in and snaps and just starts tossing ankle locks and belly-to-bellies all around. And Shamrock had a couple good matches with Bret, and him and Angle dueling ankle locks, like that's a match I always wanted to see. And you kind of need that one base big guy, bigger guy, that Bret and Punk can work off of. So maybe Bret messes his leg up and Angle Germans him through a table and takes him out for a while. But he comes back and just goes bonkers at the end. I don't know. It's just four guys I've always really enjoyed and see as similar in different ways. Different but similar. And I think Shamrock could be fun in the, can this guy hang in this match? Oh, okay, he did okay with these three great generals.
I will give you this. I do think that four-way matches always work better than three-way matches.
Yeah, I agree.
Like triple threats. Because inevitably what happens, we talk about this a lot on the reaction shows, and we talked about a little bit last night with the women's match. What usually happens is you got to find a way to get one of the people out of the ring so that the other two can wrestle. Then one of those people gets thrown out of the ring. The other person comes in. It's such a contrived, boring, stale formula. Whereas with four-way matches, you're always going to have movement. You can always pair the four guys up differently. And when you break a hold or break a move, you don't have to slow the match down, or you don't have to necessarily even speed the match up because there's enough movable parts to keep it interesting. So I like your people. The Shamrock thing definitely threw me for a loop, but he's definitely going to be more protected in a four-way match than he would be in a triple threat or a singles match. Because Shamrock's a guy I wanted to root for during the Attitude Era, but I've never seen that one absolutely great Ken Shamrock match in that time period. Now, I will say, my good buddy Phil Schneider begged me, I wouldn't say beg, but he asked me to make what we call a PWFG sampler, where I made a collection of matches from the Japanese Fed, PWFG, right? Pro Wrestling Fujiwara Gama, okay? And it was run by a guy named Fujiwara, who's a Japanese legend. Guys like Kane, Glenn Jacobs, Taka Michinoku, Ken Shamrock. These guys all wrestled in this small Japanese promotion. And Shamrock had legitimately great matches in that promotion. So if I were to put Shamrock in there, I would have put 1992-93 era Shamrock in that match. And I just wanted to throw that out there as kind of a history lesson for people, because they might not know that. But in the WWF, would you agree there isn't really that super standout match? Maybe one of the Owen Dungeon or
right. That's what I was thinking. So that's why I said 98, because I'm thinking the turn right before, because I feel like he's his most over during the Rock feud. And the reason I picked him too is he always had good energy and never stopped and had good charisma. So I mean, I feel like that adds to this match.
Just this past year, the man had charisma, had a huge television rating for Bellator, fighting Kimbo Slice.
And right here, he did a good rating here on PTBN. He was on two shows. So he did a great job there, too. Really nice guy, and took the time to talk with us. But
that's awesome.
His other run, that late 98, I love, too, where he was the heel with kind of the Robo Shamrock thing. Remember that one night he ran to that tournament and snapped everyone's ankles there and beat X-Pac to win the Intercontinental title.
That's right.
So I like that. I want it as a face, but maybe right before he's about to go heel. So here's one good triple threat he was in, Will, I think, was that one at Breakdown with him, The Rock, and Mankind in the cage. Like that was pretty good for Shamrock, I thought, at that run.
Yeah, at the time, live, I liked it. But on it's not a match that holds up years later. But yeah, live, I really enjoyed that. So your faces are going to be, I'm guessing, Shamrock and Brett, right? And then your heels are going to be, because you got to have Punk as a heel because he's such a great heel talker.
Yeah.
And Angle is kind of a great heel too, right? Like you could have CM Punk doing his straight edge serious promos and then, you know, Kurt Angle backing him up with his goofy little cowboy hat or something. You don't like the cowboy hat?
I do like the cowboy hat. That was one of my favorite eras of Kurt Angle. You were on a roll. I wasn't going to interrupt you, but I am now. Okay. I think, I like Shamrock as the face too, because he was almost like, in a way, the poor man's Dirty F Sting, where he was always kind of trusting and always got screwed one way or another. So I picture him first to get the ankle lock. Like, I picture him and Kurt keep dueling to try and get the ankle lock on each other. And the whole point of their build is who had the better ankle lock. And so Shamrock is the first to get it on, but he, like, eats a chair or something. And then I picture the match ending. I don't know, Angle takes out Shamrock with the ankle lock. I want Brett to retain, but so maybe.
I got it. Here's how I would do it.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's what I would do.
Do it. Lay it on me.
You're going to have Shamrock hook an Angle in the ankle lock, okay? So now Angle's foot's going to be taken out. He's going to be on the verge of tapping. CM Punk comes, kicks Shamrock in the head to break the ankle lock, hits the F5, okay? So now Angle's hurt with his ankle, like, so he's writhing on the ground. Then you have Shamrock, who's out because he just got nailed the GTS. Brett comes up behind Punk, rolls him up with an O'Connor roll or one of his fancy roll-ups. 1, 2, 3. Retains.
Yeah, I think it's the way to go because none of those guys are going to submit to the sharpshooter. So and Brett, too, during that run of 94, and we just watched a lot of those. We just watched them all for our Vintage Vault Refresh series on PTBN. And that was almost his hallmark. You know, he was always able to sneak out that win. And that's what made the feud with Owen fun, because Owen did that to him, and that's how he got burnt by it.
Yeah, well he was trying to roll Owen up, do that like over-the-top roll, and then Owen hooked him to where he couldn't do the full rotation, and that's how Owen got the pin. Yeah.
So I think it's a perfect way to have a 94 Brett match end is with a roll-up of Punk, right, when Punk thinks he has him. So I think I like that booking there, and I like the face-heel alignment you went with. And the fun thing is you could do that match all different kind of combos and all different roles. You could have Punk and Angle be the faces, and you could do, you know, Brett when he was at his heel best in 97, or you can do Shamrock as the Robo, you know, heel Shamrock. You can mix them up and align them up however you want.
Yeah,
I think either way they'd have a fun match.
And you really threw me a loop with a four-way match, man. I was like, wow, okay. So, all right, let me go to my next one. My next dream match, actually, I'm going to throw in a couple of tag teams here, okay? And it's going to be 1986 Rock and Roll Express. This is Ricky Morton at his peak, at his most popular, with a not an outrageous mullet, but kind of a Southern rock mullet. You know, so he's kicking it with a nice little mullet there. And I'm going to have them go up against 2013-14 era Wyatt family.
Nice.
And I'm talking Harper and Rowan. And so you have these two big Southern Colt members beating up on the little Southern guys. But the little Southern guys are smarter, they're faster, and they're more experienced. But the Harper and Wyatt were such a great team together. Like, Harper and Rowan, excuse me. Because Rowan is not that great of a wrestler. But when he was tagging with Harper, he was actively good in those matches. He was finally starting to get it, so to speak. His movements didn't seem as awkward as they did when he first appeared. Like, after working with Harper for so long, they really just clicked in the ring. Plus, you're talking about two guys who are really just going to beat the hell out of Ricky Morton. And if there's one thing Ricky Morton can do, is sell his ass off in a ring, man. Am I wrong?
Mm-hmm.
So,
and
then he's going to hit that tag to Robert Gibson, even though Robert Gibson's one eye is going to be looking a little bit the other way. It's going to throw off Rowan because Rowan's kind of stupid. He's going to be looking at the wrong eye. Robert Gibson's going to go. He's going to maybe hit a drop kick, maybe a flying forearm, boom, boom, boom.
And plus, you also can say the Wyatts won't be grossed out when Ricky Morton has the girl shit on the table.
No.
They'll be fine with that.
Yeah.
Now that doesn't freak them out.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen inside the ring. Okay,
well, so it could be part of the build. You know, they could be looking for him backstage to beat him up, and they go into the room, and they're into it. You know,
you just took my dream match to the gutter. Man. Come on. And so, and this could be a bloody match.
Yeah.
I mean, Ricky Morton wasn't afraid to get beat up and bloody, and you'd have all the girls screaming and crying, and you'd have all their hillbilly boyfriends cheering the Wyatts on to beat up the little pretty boy sissies. And then, ultimately, rock and roll's got to go over. They're going to hit the double drop kick to send Harper out, and then while Morton's distracting...
10 minutes, guys, 10 minutes.
While Morton's distracting Rowan, someone's going to come behind, get that 1-2-3. Little guys are going to run out of the ring, grab their belts, and run out the door. That's how it's going to end. The Wyatts are going to be in the ring pissed off that they let the little guys get the best of them. What's your next match, buddy?
All right. So I am going big for this one, big time. I am taking two of the biggest headliners, and this is probably, it's not the most creative one because there's actually a chance it's they're talking about it may happen next year, but not in the iteration we want it to happen. And that is 1985 Hulk Hogan. It is Hulkamania, or even 87, whatever you want to say, one of those two. It's Hulkamania.
I would go 85 because he was a much better worker.
Better worker still. So and huge still. So huge, peak of his powers in ring, can adapt against the man who has shocked the world by all the way he's been adapting this year and having all these indie dream matches that you never expected from a guy like that. One of the biggest stars of the 2000s, that's John Cena. So I'm putting these two guys in the ring. I'm selling out whatever dome you want to put this thing in. 1985, Hulk Hogan. 2015, John Cena. Face versus face, but you go with Cena bringing a little bit of heel heat, kind of like the Shawn Michaels 05 Matt did, where he starts turning himself just a little bit, where he's not alienating his fans, but he's being kind of an asshole about it.
Well, you know what kind of reaction this is going to get, right?
Oh, yeah. We hate Cena. We love Hulk.
This is going to be 2002 WrestleMania all over again. This is going to be Hogan versus Rock. Everybody's happy for Hogan. You know what I mean? This is going to be...
But don't forget, no one knows that if we're taking 85 Hogan, he's never been heel, right?
Yeah.
So everyone already loves him anyway. But 2015 Cena is very divisive, so...
No, that's true. No, Cena's going to get booed out of the building. It's going to be...
The kids are going to be torn, right? The kids are torn because the kids loved Hulk in 85, but they love Cena now. Both big guys with the Make-A-Wish. I mean, just, crazy heat. And you know these two could put on a good match. We've seen Cena do it across the board with... Whether it's great guys like Cesaro or Owens or Punk or just guys like Rock or Hogan that work that slightly different style, more of a power style. You know, Cena's able to adapt to that too. I mean, him and Rock at WrestleMania 28, you were there live. It was a great match. So I think it would be really fun. I think that's the one, one dream match would be really cool. And now there's rumors we may get it next year. Obviously, it won't be nearly the same, not even close to the same.
See, I really don't want to see that. Now, I want to see your version of the match.
Yes.
I do not want to see a modern day version of that match. Just what a waste. What a waste. Hogan, like Taker, like all these other old guys, they need to retire. They need to shine their Hall of Fame rings, do a couple of specials on the network, and stay out of my ring. Sorry. I just, God, it just drives me nuts.
Will, tell me though, who is Vince McMahon? Who is he choosing to over in this match? There's got to be Hogan.
Oh,
right?
85 Hogan. Yeah. No doubt. 85 Hogan. Because if you put 85 Hogan in today, then you don't have the lower ratings. That's, you know, Cena's not saving him from the ratings right now.
Yeah, but is Hogan overexposed if he's going to be on every week wrestling constantly? Don't forget a big
he's
alert.
He's not going to be. Okay. Even then, like, same thing with Brock last year. You didn't have to have Brock every week when he was champion.
Well, they don't have to have Cena every week in theory either. So if Cena was wrestling that schedule, would he not be as overexposed? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, maybe, but I'm still going with the idea that
Hogan's still the bigger money maker.
Because Hogan can still be on TV every week. I mean, he was able to not wrestle on Nitro and be the best heel during the WCW versus NWO feud.
Yeah,
you know, true. He didn't wrestle every week, but he was still on
Cena. Yeah, but Cena, if you really break it down, what top level, you know, ace babyface has ever been? I mean, Lawler, I guess, is the closest in Memphis that's been on TV in the ring. More than, I mean, John Cena has been going, I mean, he's taken barely any time off since really 2002, but let's call it 05 is when he became a star. I mean, 10 right. years of sometimes appearing twice a week, at least once a week, dozens of matches a month. You know, it's a guy that is working this much crazier schedule than the peers he's always compared to. Yeah. When
true.
People question his drawing power and ability and, you know, the ratings and all that. No one ever had to be on top as long as he has. And look at him. Still.
Well, I still blame the company for that. Because,
oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Because they've had opportunities to push guys to the next level.
But he's at his best. I mean, he was great in the past at times, but when has he ever been this consistently great in the ring? I mean, I know it has a lot to do with the guys he's working with, but this is a guy that could be sitting back on his millions.
I would argue 2007.
Right.
When he was having the great matches with Umaga, carrying like Kali to like his one watchable match. 2007 Cena was pretty peak too.
Is this his second best year ever?
Guys,
I would say it's probably
minutes.
Up there.
It's close. But I'm still saying Hogan gets the 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
Hogan has 30 years of staying power. Cena has 10, you know?
Yeah.
I'm saying in reflection. Plus, I lived through the original Hulkamania. It was huge. It was insane how big he was at his peak, man. So.
Hey, I was alive too. I may have been 4, Will, but I was there.
Well, I want to get one more in here.
All right, let's go. We got 5 minutes, but 4.5 minutes. So you're all yours.
Yeah. So I'm going to pick two guys that I'm probably going to have to give a little rah-rah history lesson for, but I think it would be an amazing matchup because both guys are so versatile in the ring. And that's 1990 El Dandy, who's considered a joke in most corners, right? Not in my corner, not in ProWrestlingOnly.com. El Dandy's considered a legend. But in a lot of corners, they remember the Bret Hart, who are you to doubt El Dandy promo. They don't take him seriously because they don't know who he is. 1990, El Dandy was the wrestler of the year. He's had amazing matches. I've said it on other podcasts. I'll say it again. He's one of the greatest brawlers. He's a great technical wrestler. He's a great mat wrestler. He's a great hype flyer. And in 1990, at his peak, he was able to put all those things together. And I'm going to match him up with another guy who doesn't get a lot of credit because he's usually seen as like Jerry Lawler's arch nemesis, but he's never been taken seriously in other promotions besides Memphis, and that's 1983 Bill Dundee. Dundee is one of the best television wrestlers of his time. And when I'm talking about, you know, back in the territory days when television was taped in front of 100, 150 people in a small studio, those cameras are right up on the ring, and Bill Dundee was one of the greatest TV match performers of the time and one of the best punchers, a guy who could fly, a guy who could brawl, a guy who could bleed. I think El Dandy and Bill Dundee, if they could get beyond the language barrier, would have an amazing match. And it could be any type of match you wanted. It could be a brawl, it could be a blood feud, it could be a high-flying spot fest. It could be a technical mat clinic. Those two guys are two of the best when it comes to versatility. What do you got? You got a third one?
No, I like that. What do we got for time, Dan?
2-minute warning.
Okay.
You can do one.
All right. Well, here's a layup one. So we don't even have to talk much about it. Let's go with 80. What's your peak Savage? 88?
I got 86.
86. All right. 86 Savage versus what's your peak? Because, see, there's two levels of Daniel Bryan, right? You have his WWE peak, which is probably 12, 13, but then you have his ROH indie peak, which is 05, 06.
If we're going to do Daniel Bryan versus Savage, you want Daniel Bryan that's accustomed to wrestling in front of tens of thousands of fans.
So we want 13. We'll call it 2013 Daniel Bryan, when he was really starting to break out, getting the personality stuff down, the talking.
Oh, I love that matchup. I actually had – it's funny you put Daniel Bryan. I actually had 86 Savage versus 2011 CM Punk, which I thought would have been pretty amazing too.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Because Punk is like a hybrid. Like he reminds me a lot of Brett in some ways and a lot of Savage in some ways in the ring. So he's a kind of a mix of the two.
I like the Daniel Bryan matchup because he's small enough to where Savage can abuse him. And Savage is a heel at the time. Like, Savage is a really great heel in 1986. But Daniel Bryan, and this is why he's so great, whether he's wrestling big guys like Roman Reigns or Mark Henry, Big Show, whoever, or smaller guys, his offense is so credible that you could believe he could pin Randy Savage. You could believe that he could get one up on a Shawn Michaels or whoever he was in the ring with. It doesn't matter who he's in the ring with. His wrestling style, he's going to be able to adapt to his opponent. And his offense is so awesome that whenever he hits the other guy, it's going to make it look like it hurts. So I love that matchup, Daniel Bryan versus Randy Savage. Man, I wish Daniel Bryan was, I don't know. I wish Savage was either around 20 years later or Bryan was around 20 years earlier. Man, that's a great matchup.
Definitely. And the epitome of what we wanted to talk about here tonight, the dream matchups.
And time is up.
Look at that. Whoa! Didn't even need 94 HJY. Dan counted us in on that one. So we are good to wrap up. So why don't we go ahead, we'll take a little break, Ski, and we'll come back. We'll talk about our second challenge. Got a vodka, a drink, fuck girls, got the bait on the front porch. I got some icing. If you like it, taste the tea, then come along with me. Summertime is steaming, don't give me no bugs. Glass some ice and a dash of from this martini time. Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on The Mothership, The Place to Be Podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Events, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport featuring Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Sound hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PTBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net. Replacement Issue. We are back at episode 5 of the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast. Hope you enjoyed that little break talking about all the shows on the Place to Be Podcast Network feed on iTunes and PlacementNation.com. And, Will, we got one game in the books. We did some dream matches. We talked about some matches that never were that we'd love to see, and I thought they were all great choices. They'd make a hell of a card or a DVD compilation someday if we can create holograms and teleport people back to the past. We can.
You never know anymore. You never know.
May have these matches someday indeed. So, all right, Daniel, why don't you come in and tell us what is challenge number 2?
Fellas, your second fall is my personal favorite. I know we're really new to this, but this is my favorite game so far. It's Living the Gimmick, and we're looking at the many different faces, names, and what have you of the... I'm all choked up about this. Of the one and only Barry Darso. Guys, take it away.
All right.
He is the one and only.
So I believe it was episode 1, we did John Tenta. So we're back here, Living the Gimmick, and what we do is we go through all the different gimmicks of this guy's career, and we talk about them, we break them down, and what we liked, what we disliked, and Will, you chose Barry Darso, so tell us why before we get started. Why did you pick this man?
Well, here's the thing. Like, I have a great affection for John Tenta. Mm-hmm. Like, even though I don't think he's one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, even though I think he had some questionable peaks and valleys in his career, I still root for the guy. If he's on my TV, I don't turn the television. He is the exact opposite of Barry Darso in my view. So for a guy, I wanted to make sure that our next Live in the Gimmick game was one that a guy that I have great disdain for. For as much affection as I have for John Tenta, I have twice as much disdain for Barry Darso. I think he is actively one of the worst wrestlers to collect a paycheck for so long. I just don't get it. There's only one period in his entire career where I could think this guy is having pretty decent matches, and that's when he was teamed up with Ivan Koloff as part of the Russians. That's it. That's it. The rest of his career, I think, is garbage, including his run as Demolition, by the way, which we can happily talk about when we get to that.
We'll get there. All right, so let's start early on. So he makes his debut in Hawaii as Czar Mongo, and I believe he carried a dog named Pepe, and he talked like this, baby. Czar Mongo is here in Hawaii.
No.
Wrong guy? Wrong manga?
Yeah, wrong manga. Okay.
In that Tatanka toy?
That would be Mongo McMichael.
Oh, right. Maybe there's a Mongo out there.
And the dog was not named Deborah. Now,
yeah, Pepe. This is,
no, every Mongolian gimmick of the late 70s, early 80s had to have a bald guy who had a little tuft of hair at the top. You know, had to be like a foreigner. But when you look at this guy, and you can go on YouTube and just type in Barry Darso is Mongolian. That's all you got to type in. Barry Darso is Mongolian. And you'll see his partner, his Mongolian partner, hyping Darso up as like this superhuman with strength, because Barry Darso is lifting barbells in the ring. Okay? And they talk in perfect English because, well, Darso is not a Mongolian and neither is his partner. And it's such a ridiculous gimmick. It's one in a long line of stupid, unbelievable gimmicks for this guy. So that's, I think, all that really needs to be said about Czar Mongo.
Well, in 1984, he turns on Kevin Green, goes with the Four Horsemen. And then he goes to Mid-South Wrestling as Crusher Darso, a turncoat American who's now a Soviet sympathizer, tag team partner of Nikolai Volkov.
Talking about Kevin Green?
Steve Mongo McMichael turning on Kevin Green. Come on. You got to hang, Will.
Oh, okay.
Keep up.
Threw me off.
All right. And then he beat Stevie Wright in the worst match I've ever seen in Providence, Rhode Island. So he changed his name to Crusher Khrushchev as well while in Mid-South, won the first ever Mid-South television title in a tournament. And this is all via Wikipedia, by the way. Beating Terry Taylor in the finals in May and then moved on to Florida, blah, blah, blah. So he's Crusher Darso into Crusher Khrushchev, and that carries right through into his trip down to Jim Crockett Promotions, and that is where he hooks up, like what you said, with Ivan and Nikita Koloff. They become six-man tag team champions. So, again, portraying this time's a little bit different, though, right? So before, they're pretending he's Mongolian. But now they're saying he's a sympathizer, Soviet sympathizer. So they're not trying to hide that he's not really Russian. Does that make it any better for you?
No. Because the guy is such an unconvincing interview that, I mean, think about this. You have Uncle Ivan. You know, you have Nikita, the pure brute, muscular, steroided up, I would say wrestling's equivalent of Drago, right? I mean, Nikita was just scary back in the day. And Nikita lived the gimmick. He would not talk to people in the airports, and he would act like he was Russian, like he didn't understand what people were saying. You know, it was ridiculous. This guy talks with his little squeaky voice and tries to act intimidating. It was garbage. It was garbage. I understand the whole Russian sympathizer gimmick. I get it. But they couldn't have picked a better wrestler. He was so horrible. And then he was Crusher Khrushchev. So now he's no longer Crusher Darso. At least with Darso, it's who he is. But if you tuned in to, I would say, Crockett Television 1985, and you heard this guy's name was Crusher Khrushchev, you probably thought he was a Russian. And then you hear him talk, it just kills the illusion. When you hear Nikita Koloff talk, oh, the Russian lariat. Oh, man, that guy's really a Russian. I can't believe they found a real Russian, you know. Then you hear this guy talk, kills the gimmick, kills the team. Just no credibility with me whatsoever. Ivan and Nikita, evil communist Russians.
It's almost Crusher, like they should
Khrushchev,
have made it,
cartoon character.
Instead of a sympathizer, it's like they should have made it where they took, like, this young... maybe this guy was joining the army and he was disenfranchised, and they talked to him and they won him over and he jumped ship, and he's this impressionable young kid. He's a little scared. Like, you know, the way you're describing how his promo skills were and how green he was, maybe he would have been better suited for something like that,
maybe.
Where he's not a sympathizer. He's not a tough guy sympathizer. He's more like a lost kid that got kind of duped by these evil Russians. Like, maybe that works better. Because if you watch the Americans, well, that happened all the time back in the 80s. You had these kids
sure.
that sucked into the Russian spies, and they were in over their head. They didn't know what the hell they were doing, and before you know it, they're shooting someone or getting killed. And you know, they could have played that up. You know, that would have been hot at the time.
I have no love for this guy. And to me, when you look at Nikita Koloff, like, he looks like he is Russian engineered, right?
Yeah.
I mean, but Crusher Khrushchev was like a little flabby. I mean, he's a big dude, don't get me wrong, but he wasn't all roided out.
And, you're not fat shaming, are you, Will?
Yes, I am, because in the 80s, you want your Russians to be big, roided up.
That's what they were. They all were. It was a big country of roided up freaks.
Even the ones that came in later, like Korchenko or whoever, they were all roided up dudes.
Nikolai Volkov. Just jacked. That's what you think of.
No, I think he's a garbage wrestler, too.
Boris Zukov? He had the roid head.
Zukov.
He had Barry Bonds' head.
I was thinking more like the Kurchenko in UWF or Vladimir Kozlov. Yes, those were huge, big, roided up dudes,
Rusev.
Man.
Oh, he's Bulgarian.
He's Bulgarian, but that's why I want big, mean looking dudes, not flabby, you know, fat dudes. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just have nothing good to say about Darso the Russian. What do you think, man? I mean, are you okay with him as a Russian sympathizer? Are you okay with his squeaky, high-pitched voice hanging in there with Uncle Ivan and Nikita?
No, I think they did it just to have a third guy for the six-man titles. No,
not true.
I mean, I think if they went the way I laid out earlier that I thought of, I think that would have been more acceptable if they had him be the guy that was kind of duped and suckered in. And maybe that sets up a little redemption story later, too, if they want to go that way. I think that looks better than trying to make it like he's some tough guy sympathizer. If they made it like he was almost tricked in and given false promises, disenfranchised with America, and these guys preyed on his weak mind, and he's almost portrayed more like this is young, because he was young and green. So, and if he sounded nervous, that he looked nervous, like, that would have made much more sense. And I think it's a little bit more believable And it makes Ivan and Nikita look even more evil, or even just Ivan, if he's the guy that's behind it, where he's manipulating this young American to come to the foreign side and do their dirty work. And maybe they sell him out a lot. Maybe they have him take the hit on big moves. And,
right.
You know, he keeps taking the bullet for the team.
That's why you needed to be booking 1985 Jim Crockett and Darso, because that sounded so much better than what they did with him. I don't know. I hate him. All right, what's next?
Well, he leaves because he hated him so much and he knew it. So he's like, well, screw this. I'm out of here. He's going to the WWF, and he becomes part of Demolition. The original team was Bill 80 as Axe and Randy Colley, one of the former Moondogs, as Smash. Colley left. He was too recognizable. The fans were chanting Moondog at him. And
Were they really?
Yes. Well, according to Wikipedia.
Oh, man.
But I'm pretty sure that's why they did it. Even in the disguise with the paint, they knew it was him. And that's kind of sad, because he probably ended up missing out on quite a bit of payday from getting taken out of this gimmick that would end up being pretty successful. And, of course, Darso comes in now as Smash, managed by Johnny V, replaced by Mr. Fuji, and would win the titles pretty early on at WrestleMania 4. Major pop, even as heels, had a heel run through at 88. Did the big double turn at Survivor Series 88, where Mr. Fuji is the dumbest human being ever to be involved in pro wrestling. Ditches the champions for the non-champions, and they never win. They would lose to the Brainbusters, win it back, lose to the Colossal Connection, win it back, in one of my favorite matches of all time, just for energy and pop reasons at WrestleMania 6, and the when Andre would finally end his heel run and turn face, smack Bobby around, and then they become the bastardized version where Axe has to leave due to heart issues, Crush comes in, they lose the titles to the Heart Foundation, and just kind of meander around through the rest of 91.
Right. Well, let me ask you this, okay? And I really want your opinion on this. Did you look at Demolition, because you're younger than I am, and I really believe this is a generational thing or an age thing, maybe even a geographical thing. When I'm growing up, and I'm used to the Road Warriors, and I'm used to Hawk and Animal, and to me that's your face paint, roided up tag team. And these guys come in with their leather S&M tribute, with the Beastmaster masks and the dungeon gear. Did you see them as like the WWF's version of the Road Warriors, or did you just look at them as their own entity?
Well, see, I'm a tough sell on this because I started watching in 1990. So I didn't really know the Road Warriors until they showed up at SummerSlam 90. So to me, and I didn't look at them as a Demolition ripoff. Like, I kind of knew, somehow I knew they existed, but I didn't really know them. So I guess I looked at them as separate entities, because when they showed up in WWF, they didn't really look like Demolition. They had, like, the big shoulder pads that had the foam spikes on them. The paint was a little bit different. They had different colors. So to me, neither of them looked like knockoffs. They just both looked like two maniacal teams that had face paint on.
Okay, well, history dictates that before the Road Warriors, there weren't any roided up, face painted tag teams in leather walking around.
But do you feel like the Powers of Pain were more of a ripoff than Demolition?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But no. Not more than Demolition. I think they were both ripoffs. Like, I think, you know, in the 80s, one of the habits was, once the Rock and Roll Express got big, everybody had to start having their own rock and roll team. Right. Rock and Roll RPMs, the Midnight Rockers, et cetera, right? Everyone needed their young, to quote Jerry Jarrett or Bill Watts or whoever says the story, everybody needed their blowjob tag team.
Young Stallions.
Yeah, whoever. Yeah, Young Stallions, come on. But most of these guys had to have mullets, and they had to have, like, leopard print tights. Okay?
The Stallions kind of were the answers to that, right, though? If you think about it, who else would have been the WWF's team before the Rockers came in? I think it was them. They had the Crank It Up song. It was kind of like a rock theme.
I think they were behind the times. You know what I mean? I think that until the Rockers came in, because when the Rockers debuted, like, they weren't, like, really hip. And because, like, wrestling has never been, like, really hip. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Wrestling has always been behind the times. But I think when the Rockers came in, they finally had their answer as well, but it was like a little late. They were a little corny by that time. But getting back to Demolition, people my age, like my buddy Johnny Sorrow, he's an old man. He's in his mid-40s. he felt the same way. Like, no, this is clearly a ripoff of the Road Warriors. Like, WWF couldn't get the Road Warriors because the Road Warriors, at the peak of their popularity, they kind of called their own shots. They went to Japan when they wanted to. When they weren't happy with Vern, they took off for Crockett. The pretty savvy businessmen, too. And so there's no way Vince McMahon's controlling those guys at that time. Okay.
Well, it's funny, they create Demolition, but then they bring in the Powers of Pain. So they end up with both of them.
Right. Well, you know, that stems from them wanting the Powers of Pain and Crockett. Do you remember in Crockett they wanted them to do the scaffold matches? Yep. I forgot who told me that. I don't want to act like that was my own knowledge. Somebody told me that. Maybe Chris Zellner, because Zellner's...
It was on the... they talked about it. I mean, I had heard that anyway, but they talked about it a lot on the Death of Jim Crockett podcast.
Okay, then that's what it was. I knew I heard it somewhere. I don't want to make it seem like it was my own, you know. But anyway, it's like, that's insane. Why are they going to make these guys do scaffold matches? So I think that now... Vince McMahon is probably looking at the Powers of Pain and saying, well, crap, I already gave the gimmick to Demolition.
Right.
Well, I'm going to capitalize on these guys too.
And they got big time over. I mean,
yeah,
they got a huge pop at WrestleMania 4 and they beat Strikeforce and then they just kept rolling. I mean, the fans forced them to turn them face because they were out popping the Powers of Pain when the Powers of Pain came in later in 88. They did the double turn in 89.
Let's be fair. Bill Leedy, who is the other guy in Demolition, is Axe, right? He's a great wrestler. He used to be the Masked Superstar. Now he's Demolition. Bill Leedy is a great wrestler. Only problem is looks like a grandpa.
All right. Well, you always are saying how, you know, you always bring up the age thing. So I'm telling you from my perspective, at age 10, I didn't give a shit about Bill Leedy being the Masked Superstar who was a great worker in 1984. Yeah, you know, like that didn't matter to me. I just saw two guys that were out there just smashing people. They had fun promos, right? They had talking about Demolition Derby and screaming and blah, and had awesome music, one of the best themes of all time. Here comes the Axe, just one of the most iconic themes of that generation.
And but would you agree though that there is a disconnect in age though, because someone from
I think it's more region though than age on this one. I really do. I think if you weren't as up on, the Road Warriors, Jim Crockett stuff, because I think I could have even started maybe. Well, Scott knew a lot. He was a big Road Warriors fan, so maybe I'm off on that.
Here's why I want to disagree that it was purely on region. I think it also had to do with your investment time, like. At my peak of wrestling fandom, 84, 85, 86, I'm subscribing to Pro Wrestling Illustrated. I'm buying the wrestler magazines, Inside Wrestling. Yeah. So even guys I couldn't see on TV, I'm reading about in these magazines, picturing, what it would be like to see them in TV.
Right.
Yeah. But I'm also like seeing all of these different feds at the same time because now we're talking cable. I always tell this, and I'll say it again. 1986, there were some Saturdays where I could wake up, watch Saturday morning cartoons at noon when the UWF was shown on TV. From noon up until midnight, I could watch wrestling for maybe 9 out of those 12 hours and not miss a beat. I mean, we're talking UWF, WWF syndication, 4 hours of Crockett, pro worldwide, 2 hours of Saturday night, maybe Saturday night's main event mixed in. Our world-class TV was always shown late at night on Saturday nights, like 11-ish, 12-ish. I mean, we're talking lots of hours of wrestling every week, man. And I got to see a lot of guys. Like when the Dingo Warrior, like the Blade Runners were another one. When Sting and... Ultimate Warrior were packaged as Blade Runners. Oh, Road Warriors ripoffs, and they were the first ones.
Old,
flabby, balding dudes come in and try to be badasses.
They were to people who didn't know. Like to me,
To 10-year-olds and 8-year-olds, you're absolutely right.
But that was the target audience. That was the WWF's target audience in 1988, 89, 90, selling toys. I mean, when I got
But I'm a 14-year-old who had been watching wrestling for 6 years, and now you're forcing me out by giving me some two guys who aren't
credible. Yeah, but bringing in a whole other generation of kids. I mean, if you ask anyone that grew up in that era
hold on.
Demolition is, I mean, that they know the song. They know the look. They know the leather. You know, that
I
was
know
one
the
of,
song.
Yep.
Here comes the axe. Here comes the smash.
Awesome.
Dude, I know the song. Okay, I agree with that. It's no Iron Man, which was the Road Warriors theme.
Oh, anyone could have taken an actual theme. I mean, come on, that was a real song.
Wrong.
Just them.
Let me finish. Iron Man combined with the Road Warriors was so scary that the Road Warriors opponents would run out of the ring once they heard Black Sabbath. That's how scary they were, man. Those opponents would run out of the ring.
You have to do more with Ozzy or more with the Road Warriors?
it's a combination of the both because right.
Look,
worked.
I'm not here to talk down on the Road Warriors. You're here to piss on Demolition. I'm saying Barry Darso in that role connected with the fans. He had good.
You're whatever, right. Connected with 8-year-olds.
Whatever lack of charisma he had while you were watching your shit studio NWA stuff, when you're watching that, he turned it up when he got into this gimmick. And by 1989, 1990, he was the charismatic guy between the two. I mean, he's the guy that I looked at more as like, Axe always looked like the grizzled leader to me, and Smash was like the young gun who had the more of the bravado. Like that. This is my take as being a kid getting into Demolition.
You know what my thought was? Where are the roids?
Look, Vince, if you're Vince the third over here, trying to juice all these guys up. This poor guy's just trying to live. Axe got all kind of heart problems. You're trying to jack him up with steroids.
If you're going to be in face paint, you need to have the roided body to match. Okay, that's from my good buddy Rob Naylor. You got to have the roids to match the face paint, or you got to be a fat African
or a clown. You can be
Kamala. Yeah, clown. I will say this: one of the moments from Demolition I really did like was that Rumble where they were 1 and 2.
Yeah.
And they squared off.
Well, that starts their real peak year is Rumble 89 through WrestleMania 6. I mean, the pop they get even at WrestleMania 5, and that was a pretty foregone conclusion match when they beat the Powers of Pain and Fuji. Like, and they were losing that match, but the crowd goes, you know, bonkers for that. And then WrestleMania 6, when they beat Colossal Connection, is just a mega pop. And that's really the end of them. Crush would come in over the summer. But, I mean, I don't know. I loved Demolition growing up. I look back, I can see their flaws now. The flaws now, but I think any kids that grew up in that generation easily latched onto Demolition just because, and they get it. I mean, credit to Darius booking. I mean, they booked them super strong. They came out there and they presented as killers, as guys that beat the shit out of everyone. And the Hart Foundation was like the other top team of that era, and Demolition was presented as superior to them until the very end when Crush came.
10 minutes.
Let me say one thing, though, because you were like, well, they brought in this whole new generation of fans. Wait a minute. Hold on. Even you have to admit that bringing in fans in the mid-80s compared to bringing in fans in the early 90s, not even close. Yeah, they brought in some new
Demolition,
fans.
They were big
hold
in
on, hold on, hold on, hold
so
on.
So 88
hold
now is the 90s?
No, 88 was the beginning of the down. Like, that's when, you know, 87 is the peak, right? 93,000, blah, 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 Detroit, right? That's the peak. After that, and then Demolition comes in.
So as, they tanked everything?
Hold on. As teenagers like myself start saying, wrestling's uncool. It was just cool 3 or 4 years ago because I had, you know, teenage friends of my sister's take me to wrestling shows, and now nobody's caught dead watching this crap anymore. You know, and then to me, that wasn't Demolition's fault. That was kind of a entire presentation of WWF fault. They were no longer, because at least in the mid-80s, even with Hogan and those guys, they did some corny crap. But at the same time,
but Demolition wasn't part of that.
No. But what I'm saying, though, is that at that time, there was still that mentality that wrestling was real, or wrestling was ooh, I want to see these guys fight. It was more about the fighting. Whereas by the time you came in, it was about the colors, the costumes, the flamboyant gimmicks.
But that was they liked to fight. They did. They fought. They beat
their
guys up.
Their fighting was fluff, dude. It was fluff. It was like two dudes giving you a Japanese massage, bro.
The only fluffing here is you with Hawk and Animal. That's the only fluffing going on.
Not even a Road Warriors fan. I'm talking about perception.
You would think so. I thought you get your Road Warriors pajamas on right now doing this podcast.
Dude, hey, don't make fun of my styrofoam shoulder.
Look. Let's jump ahead because we're going to go to 1991.
Hey, you know what we need to do for our Get the F Out deal? All right, this is what we need to do.
If you keep adding stipulations on here. You're like Paul Heyman booking this thing.
If I win, you got to dress up like a Road Warrior or face paint like a Road Warrior. If I lose, I'll face paint my face like a Demolition Smash at WrestleMania.
Yeah, you're completely going full Vince Russo on this. You're Vince adding all these bizarre steps. All right, let's go late 91. So Darso, Demolition falls apart. Crush comes in and kills the whole thing. Axe leaves. And by late 91, he's repackaged as the Great Repo Man. Sneaky heel. Repossessing. What's mine is mine. What's yours is mine, he says. As he's sneaking through the nighttime cities and towns, hijacking cars and taking other items.
And this is like when his costume was a gray condom, correct?
Yes, it was a gray condom.
Okay.
Prophylactic, as the Costandas may say. But, of course, as Wikipedia lists here, really kind of mannerism set up to be like an old version of the Riddler, like the goofy Riddler. Toe rope, carry around the ring, and his debut, I don't know if you remember, Will, he helped Ted DiBiase get his $1 million title back from Virgil, and that just set him up for a year full of success in the lower mid-card. Worked from there. So
I hated this gimmick. I hated the way he was dressed. I hated the way he looked. I thought it was...
But he owned it. He owned the gimmick. And he
But it was so stupid. It was one of the things that drove...
But he did his best to make it work. Isn't that a credit to him? I mean, it's not. He didn't come up with a gimmick, but he dove headfirst into it. He didn't no-sell the gimmick. He worked hard to... He had the you know, slinking around the ring.
Hold on. You just said Darso and work hard in the same sentence.
He worked hard to get that gimmick over. I didn't say he worked hard in the ring. He worked hard to get the gimmick over, though.
Oh, okay.
Right? He put a lot of energy into making the character. And you just told me that's all that mattered this time.
And are you going to say that? No. I'm saying there's a credibility issue. There's no credibility to have a guy who steals your cars in the wrestling ring.
He wasn't meant to be credible. He was just meant to fill up the lower mid card. That's what he was there for, to put other guys over. Put over the British Bulldog. Put over Crush. Put over Macho Man. Put over Big Boss Man. Like, that's all he was there for.
He was just a jobber. Okay. Yeah. He looked like a jobber. He wrestles like a jobber. He is a jobber. I'm okay with that.
Right. I don't think he was ever meant to be more. I don't think Repo Man was ever meant to be more than just a... I mean, look, his debut feud was to steal a title from Virgil. I mean, that's out of the gate.
So it fits his station as a loser. Yeah, I can go with that.
All right.
Yeah,
okay. So my point before with Demolition is he went ahead. He reached up and, you know, as a guy who's a loser, made it something work. He took on that role that was handed to him because Randy Colley was too ugly and looked like Moondog Spot or whatever the hell he was. And, you know, he ran with that and pulled himself up and overachieved. He overreached what he should be. And if you look at the trajectory of the rest of his career, it's all about the same level, except for Demolition that he made work.
Five minutes, guys.
Okay, so he leaves his Repo Man, does a little indie work, shows up in the crowd in WCW 1994, blowing a horn and being annoying to faces, shoves Dustin Rhodes, gets arrested. Colonel Rob Parker bails him out, comes back in as the Blacktop Bully. Of course, his most famous match is with Dustin Rhodes in the moving truck at Uncensored 95.
King of the Road.
Where they blade and they both got fired. So then he's gone, goes back to the indie. So just give me a quick, you know, 30 seconds on Blacktop Bully here.
Well, here's the thing about Blacktop Bully is it might be my favorite era of Barry Darso. And maybe that's almost completely because he's feuding with Dustin Rhodes, who's such an awesome wrestler.
And with Robert Parker.
And Colonel Rob Parker, better known as Robert Fuller. So yeah, and the King of the Road match, my buddy Phil Schneider really loves this match, so much so that he promotes this match, whereas most people historically crap on this match. My buddy Phil Schneider loves that King of the Road match. So there you go. There you go, Blacktop Bully.
And, yeah, I mean, the match was fine. You know what? They went for it in that match. They were, much like Repo Man, they dove in all the way and went for it, and, of course, both got fired. So he goes back to the indies for a bit. comes back in 97 as Stuart Payne, a villainous golfer, named after the golfer Payne Stewart at the time. And, you know, again, similar to Repo Man, was never meant to be much more, really made a home on Saturday night on the C-level shows. He would putt in the ring, and then, you know, before the match, he'd have a little putting green. Payne Stewart, the golfer, passed away in 1999, died in a plane crash, so they renamed him one of the few times WCW was a little bit tasteful, especially in 99, and renamed Mr. Hole-in-One Barry Darso and Putting Barry Darso. And he feuded with mainstays on Saturday nights, such as Jim Duggan and Chris Adams. He kept the golf gimmick until he left the company, and after that, he just worked the indies pretty much. And they've been doing a lot of demolition stuff on the indies, him and Edie, and different signings and whatnot. Any thoughts quickly on Payne Stewart, Stewart Payne?
Yeah, completely non-related to wrestling. My former dentist was a big golf fan and had a golf ball of the now-deceased Payne Stewart.
You should,
that's all
you
I have
should
to
swap
say
it out with that. One for Mr. Hole-in-One.
It was garbage, man. The guy's a garbage wrestler with garbage gimmicks. See, he should have been the garbage man. Who was the garbage guy?
Duke Drossi.
He should have been Duke the Dumpster Drossi right here. That would have been the perfect gimmick for
like
this
him
guy.
A little bit.
It would have summed up his career. His career is garbage. His matches stink like garbage. His body shape is like garbage-esque, garbage-bag-esque. Okay, and that's what I think about his
well,
whole
in fairness,
minutes,
Duke Drossi
two
was,
minutes.
Was his gimmick on the indie. That was all him. He didn't, you know, that wasn't a WWF creation, so.
So. Well, since we're running out of time, okay, last time we ranked the gimmicks.
Yep.
And so I would just say, like, Crusher Darso, Crusher Grusev, the Khrushchev, the Russian is one gimmick.
Crusher
right?
Rusev would be a lot better. That's for sure.
Crusher Rusev is awesome.
Rusev
is my man. I always say Rusev forever. There you go. So what do we got here? We got Tsar Mongo, which I we got to throw him out because we really don't know anything about him.
Right. Mongo McMichael. Yep.
So how do you rank the Russian, the Demolition Guy, the Repo Man, the Hole-in-One, and Blacktop?
All right. I mean, Smash has to be number one. I mean, what
for
do you,
you
want to say?
For you.
You're the worst. All right, so Smash, Blacktop, Repo Man, Payne Stewart, just because it's so freaking absurd that they named him after a real golfer and then the golfer died. That's it. I mean, we didn't even talk about that. How WCW is that? That they, of all the golfers they named this guy after is the one that dies like months later.
Could have been Larry Zbyszko, right?
Cursed
who
him.
Is a golfer.
Cursed him. And then I guess Khrushchev and then Crusher Darso.
Well,
oh,
I'm going to
Yeah, I said Repo Man, right? So Smash, Blacktop, Repo, Payne, Crusher,
okay.
Czar.
I'm going to go Duke the Dumpster Drossi is his number one gimmick. Then we're going to go Crusher Khrushchev because he had one good match as Crush, and he never had any good matches as any other gimmick. Then we'll go Smash in the Road Warriors tribute act. Then we'll do Blacktop Bully because my friend Phil likes the King of the Road match. And then we'll do one of the worst gimmicks, Russell Crapp-esque, Repo Man, as the last one.
I'll put Smash slamming Bossman and Akeem back-to-back at SummerSlam 89. It gets any moment you'll ever choose from anything.
Oh, no.
Great moment.
No, I can't stand Demolition.
And that's it. Time is up.
Well, as you those of you listening now, William, there are two theme songs we discussed tonight, and I can tell you which one takes us out of the segment, and it has nothing to do with Ozzy Osbourne. How about that? Rick Derringer for life. So why don't we take a quick break? Let's listen
Hold on. When we do our retrospective on the Road Warriors and we're kicking in some Iron Man, I guarantee you there are going to be a bunch of jobbers listening to the podcast that run away because they're going to be scared.
So where do we rank Drunk Hawk? Is that number one or number two? Or how about Heidenreich, LOD?
It's not even... Hey, once they came out with that ventriloquist act, man, the Road Warriors were done.
Rocco. All right, let's take a break. Listen to all the shows on the PWOP TV and podcast feed. We'll be back with our third challenge into the mail.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. That's the pro wrestling only place to be nation podcast network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows. Not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds, wrestling culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Goodwill Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's Tag Teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brainbuster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWO-PTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
PlayStation, we're back here, Danger Lions Wrestling Podcast number 5. Hope you enjoyed that break, and hope you enjoyed the first two segments. We talked some dream matches, and then we talked about Will's nightmare matches, and that was Barry Darso living the gimmick. And, of course, that means we just have one last challenge left before it is mail time. And Daniel McGinn, come in here and tell us, what is challenge number 3?
Challenge number 3 is one we'd like to call Building the Card, and this time we are building the Great American Bash.
All right, so for longtime fans of Place to Be podcast, you may be aware of this concept, and that is where we go year by year through a show. You pick one match from each show. You have to have one match from every year. You can't use a guy twice, so if you use Crusher Khrushchev in 1985, you can never use him again. And you have to use at least one world title match. Any other title you don't have to use, you can use. But once you use that title, you cannot use it again either. So
Hold on.
Yep.
For the sake of our time, I don't think we should have to have a match from each year. I just think that'll take up too much time.
I think you're wrong. We're going to do it, and you're going to see. How about that?
Oh, God. Okay.
All right.
All right. Yeah.
Come on. That's the whole point of this thing.
Okay, I didn't know that we had to use a match for
Step
a
off, stuff. Will. All right, so 85.
That's like 20 matches.
It's a hell of a card. We're going to do it over 2 days. 1985 to 1992, then 94 to 2000, and we're also doing the WWE's bash, and that is 04 to 2009. We're going to make it work, bud. Don't you worry. Don't you sweat it. I'm even going to have Dan reset the clock and start it now since we had to have that BS. So, Dan, start the clock now. Will, 1985, what match are you thinking?
The only match that I'm seeing here that would fit into my vision of what I would want to put on the card is Jimmy Valiant versus Paul Jones in a dog collar match. That was a really fun feud in the mid-80s. Horrible work rate. It's not going to get any stars for the matches, but so much fun to watch.
Sold. And we're doing it because I think those two guys we're probably not going to use again. So I like it. Let's put it down. Let's move on to 1986.
What do you think for 86 here, bud?
I mean, I know the Rock and Rolls and the Andersons is a pretty good match, but we're probably going to need Arn again later, I'm thinking. Do you think we need Road Warriors later? Can we do Road Warriors and Baby Dog against Midnight Express and Cornette?
We're going to have a Midnight Express match later on that is going to smoke this match, okay. And you're not going to want it. From this match, I'm or from this year, I'm going to consider Tully versus Ron Garvin in a taped fist match.
Okay.
This one, just because one of the guys is one of my favorites, Manny Fernandez versus Baron Von Raschke in a loaded glove on a pole.
Yep.
And since we already had Jones versus Valiant, we're not going to do their hair versus hair match, even though the hair versus hair match is more famous than the dog collar match.
So let me ask you this. Are we going to use Tully again? Like, do you want to use War Games in 87, or do you want to do Anderson and Blanchard against Sting and Nikita? We're going to consider that.
Yeah. Right? You know what, man? You're not going to get me to agree to any Great American Bash card without using the 1987 War Games.
Okay. So I think if we put that in, now we lose Flair, we lose Arn, we lose Luger, Blanchard, and Dillon.
And
the Road Warriors. We lose Nikita, Dusty, and Paul Ellering. So they're all off the board.
Willing to take all of them off the board for the 1987 match.
So we cannot use Tully and Ronnie Garvin then. So we need to use something different. We could do Magnum and Nikita. Oh, no, we can't use Nikita, right?
We could do Wahoo just beating the crap out of Jimmy Garvin in an Indian strap match.
I think we go that route. I think that's where we're going to be.
Okay.
All right, sure. So let's go ahead to 88. Is this your Midnight's match?
No, 88 is hard because a lot of it's a small card.
Yep.
And we've already used most of these guys. Oh, this is going to be rough.
I think we have to use I think we have to use Midnight's and Fantastics.
Oh man, I don't want to at all, but you have to because every other match has somebody who is in the War Games. Man, I just skipped 88. This was not a good card anyway. Like, this really lowers the quality of our card here. Just even consider an 88.
We have to, man.
I guess, yeah.
We can cheat a little bit. Because Scott and I used to do it. There was a dark match on the show. Rick Steiner and Dick Murdoch beat Tim Horner and Kendall Windham.
Let's use that one.
Okay. We're using our pass there for 88. We're gonna
plus, it gets Dick Murdoch on the Great American
Bash. There you go.
Pass.
Okay. See, we can work our way out of these things. All right, Bash 89, where are you looking?
I'm looking at that TV match between Sting and the Great Muta. What else? We have Lex Luger versus Steamboat in a U.S. title match. We have one of the best world title matches, Ric Flair versus Terry Funk. But, I mean, Flair was in that War Game, so.
Yeah, he's out. Luger's out.
Would you take that War Games out to include one of these matches? I wouldn't.
No.
It's me.
No, I wouldn't. So there is one route we can go, and that depends if you want to save Sting for later. Because I have a feeling we may need him. I mean, I think we just blow Cornette and Dangerously. Use that here. Nothing else. I know it's funny because Bash 89 is one of the best shows of all time. I guess we could do Luger Steamboat. Or no, Luger was Luger in that War Games? Yeah, he was.
No, Luger's. I say let's put the TV title here with the possibility of the tuxedo match.
Okay, we'll do Sting Muta for now.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, Bash 90, Vader and Tom Zenk.
Oh man, Bash 90. Let's see. Ooh, Doug Furness versus Dutch Mantel. Do we already use Brian Pillman?
No, we have not used Pillman yet.
Brian Pillman versus Buddy Landell, buddy. Or we could do Harley Race versus Tommy Rich. Man, I love me some Tommy Rich. But Harley Race is kind of over the hill at this point in time.
Microton and the Iron Sheik. Oh, God.
We in 1990?
Let's do...
Is that what you're... No.
Yeah,
no.
We're 90.
This is our Midnight Express versus Southern Boys U.S. tag match.
There you go. All right. Well,
That's why I was saving the do you disagree with that?
No,
that's
I agree.
Match. If anybody has not seen that match, I think it might be on YouTube. Find that. Southern Boys versus Midnight Express, Great American Bash 1990. The referee, my friend Charles, always likes to talk about the great performance Nick Patrick has in that match. And we also have a great Jim Cornette performance as well. So, yeah, definitely Midnight Express versus the Southern Boys.
All right.
Let's see. 91.
Of course,
whoa.
One of the worst pay-per-views
of
all time.
Do we have the Rock and Roll Express yet? We don't have the
let's
Rock and Roll
look
Express.
At the... No, I don't think we've used them. Nope.
Dude, Ricky Morton versus Robert Gibson and their feud. Best right. match on the card by far.
Lock it down.
We watched.
Even better than Big Josh and Black Blood, you sure?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
We actually watched this show and reviewed it for Where the Big Boys Play here on Place to Be Nation. And this card is a bad card, but not like one of the worst shows of all time. Or, you know, it has bad moments, but there's also some fun moments. And that match, Gibson versus Morton, is actively good. It's a very good match.
All right, so 92, can I sell you on using our world title match and dumping Sting and Muda to use Sting and Vader? Unless you want to use Steiners and Gordy and Williams.
Well, I was actually thinking of using guys that probably won't show up again. Dusty and Barry versus Austin and Rude.
Yeah, that's a good one, too.
Because there's no title. I know, but I think we're going to... Like, I think if we keep Sting versus Muda, we got the television title on the card. It's a really fun match, really famous match. I wanted to use Sting Vader, too, but I'm kind of saving the world title for later. I don't know.
Let's do that, then. Dustin and Barry against Austin and Rude.
Okay.
All right, 95. Let's see. Things get a little rough here. We can do...
This is rough. This is really rough.
Well, do we end up using Pillman?
Yeah, we put a...
Pillman Landell. Because Pillman Alex Wright's not bad. That's pretty good.
No, we did not use Pillman Landell because we used Midnight's versus Southern
Right.
Boys.
Okay, let's do Pillman Wright. I like that match.
I like it. There you go. Alex Wright versus Brian Pillman.
Yes. So 96. I mean, you got the Benoit Sullivan False Count Anywhere. You have... I mean, my choice here, honestly, you could do Steiners versus Fire and Ice, where they almost murder Scott Norton with the Frankensteiner.
we have a couple of really good matches.
Oh, we also have Mysterio and Malenko.
Yeah, but that's going to use up your cruiserweight match. Or we can do, because we have Sting versus Regal if you take off Sting versus Muda. But that's, you know, I think you can use that one. Or you also have that Steiners versus Norton and Ice Train was a fun match, like a really good power match.
So can we do this? Can we put the cruiser title, and then if we want to use that, we'll go back and dump in the Steiners?
I agree. I think that's a good idea.
All right, 97.
Easy. Savage versus DDP.
Oh, right, yeah. False Count Anywhere match. Great match.
No title on the line, so you kind of have like a great co-main event leading up to the War Games.
Perfect. Love it. 98. We got Goldberg and Conan. Have you used the U.S. title yet? I mean, that'd be a fun little squash made to throw on there.
Have we done the U.S. title yet?
I don't think so. No, we got TV and cruiserweight so far.
Huh. I mean, if you just want to see a squash, I guess you could use those two.
Well, I mean, other options are Booker and Benoit, Canyon and Saturn.
Chavo and Eddie. I'm not going to book Benoit on any of my cards.
Okay. So, all right, let's leave Eddie for later because we may need him in the SmackDown years.
Yeah, I think so. I was going to say we could do the Hogan tag, but we just used Savage. Sting, we've already used. Finley, we're going to save for the SmackDown years as well.
That's where we go Goldberg Canyon. I mean, Conan.
Just for the U.S. title, just kind of get Bill Goldberg on there at his peak, like when he was so popular.
Yeah, just murders a guy, fun part of the crowd. And if we have to come back and do a Canyon and Saturn, we can, you know?
Yeah, no, I like that idea of using Goldberg and Conan. Just for attraction purposes, it's going to beat Saturn and Canyon.
All right, 99 gets a little dicey as well as far as guys we've used and haven't.
Well, we're not using Ernest Miller versus Horace Hogan.
Now, I was going to say, do you want to throw Hack and Knobs in the hardcore, let them brawl early in the show?
Sure. I have no problem with that.
Okay.
You know,
I mean, I don't really see anything else on this card that is usable.
This is a really bad card. Like, well, we're getting into right before Russo takes over. And that, we're getting into like the nadir of WCW, like the lowest of the low. Ugh. Now, let's look at Great American Bash 2000. Oh, my God. This is Russo at his. This is painful.
And the final WCW one. We got Chronic versus the Mama Lukes.
You know what, man? Hogan versus Billy Kidman.
We're not going to use Hogan later, and we're not going to use Kidman.
We're not using that Inferno match. Right. And we're definitely not wasting our world title on Jeff Jarrett versus Kevin Nash, right?
No way. No, let's do it. Let's do Hogan Kidman. We get Hogan on the card.
That makes me feel dirty.
See, this is easy, Will. We'll be doing another one after this.
Vince Russo booking.
All right, so now we head to the WWE episodes or installments. And that is Bash 04.
Yeah.
So we still haven't used our world title match. Keep that in mind. How do you feel about the bull rope match?
The bull rope match is fun. It's bloody. How did you and Scott feel about the bull rope match watching
it? I liked it a lot rewatching it. The Judgment Day match was a lot of fun too.
Judgment Day, I think, is a legitimate classic.
Yeah, the bloodbath. And the bull rope match was fun. I liked it. It was a good swerve,
the only
too,
thing that was, know. Yeah, the, but it was, you know, at the time, it was a little upsetting that JBL
right.
won.
And Eddie's reign. I think it's easily the best match on the card. I mean, Rey and Chavo is really good, too.
That was an awesome cruiserweight match in a time where they really weren't featuring those guys to have great matches, you know. So Rey Chavo's great, but we already used Rey versus Malenko.
And I think I'd rather have Rey Malenko in the bull rope match than the other way around.
And this will be our world title match, right? Because we still haven't, since Flair had the title so many years, and we use Flair in the war games.
And we can see. I mean, if we come upon anything, that we like better, we can come back here. So let's go with JBL Eddie for now. 2005, Rey Eddie was pretty good.
Yeah, that was great.
But we've already used both.
There's nothing on this card that really appealed. Have we used Booker T yet?
No. So we could either do Booker Christian or we can do the BWO Mexicools if you wanted to burn those guys.
Well, the only thing, I don't remember. How good was Booker T Christian? I don't remember that match.
I don't remember anything about it. I mean, I guess Booker was a face in 05. I'm sure it was fine. I mean, I don't think those guys are capable of less than like 2.5 at that point, you know, so it's probably passable.
But whereas the Mexicals would probably be funner, but it's only like a 4-minute match.
Well, that's when the BWO came down on the, maybe they drove down on the big Hot Wheels or whatever, the big wheels to make fun of the, I mean, you could also, if we're not going to use Taker anywhere else, this is a pretty infamous match too, because this is where Taker ends Hassan, because this is right after the London bombings and all that stuff, when he power bombs into the ramp.
Yeah, I want my wrestling, I want my violence to have a modicum of decency, you know. I'm going to say Booker T. Christian.
Okay, let's go with
that. Because honestly, we don't have that many work rate matches. We have a lot of fun garbage already on the lower part of the card.
Okay, let's go with that. 06, Finley Regal.
That's it. It's done. Finley versus Regal. This was at that time where Finley Regal and Benoit, you know, to be fair, were just beating the crap out of each other, like on a monthly basis.
London and Kendrick against Nash and Noble is fun too, but Finley Regal's great. They just beat the shit out of each other.
Finley Regal has to go.
All right.
Can I interject here, guys, for a sec?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Does it matter that this match was for the WWE United States Championship?
I did not know that. So what U.S. title do we already have?
Goldberg Conan. We can axe that. That's garbage.
Do you remember what we were going to use for the 98 match instead of Gold?
Juventud Guerrero or Ron Reese. No, we said Canyon and Saturn was the other one.
Let's put it. Yeah, put Canyon and Saturn then. Sorry, Goldberg. Yeah, if you're going to ask me to choose between Goldberg or Fit Finley, I'm going to choose Fit Finley every day.
All right, 07. Let's see.
Wow, Umaga versus Jeff. Oh, that's IC title.
We could use that. That was a fun match. That was a fun feud they had. That was when Hardy had just come back.
The Morrison Punk match was actively not good. Like, that was not one of their good matches in the feud. I remember Punk saying he was upset that, you know, they'd give him all this time on TV. Then they'd, you know, cut their nuts off on pay-per-view. Give them 6-7 minute matches. So I kind of like the idea of having the Intercontinental Umaga and Hardy. I don't know, but that's just me. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, there's nothing else. I mean, MVP Matt is fine too, but I like Umaga Hardy. I like their whole series that year. They had a lot of fun matches with each other. And like I said, Jeff had just come back and was already like red hot right when he came back.
All right.
You know,
so
he had been back about a year.
Yeah, I like it. Let's do it.
All right.
We know it's from 2008, right? Huh? What are you thinking?
Oh, wait. Oh, Jericho Shawn.
Jericho Shawn has to be. Yep. Well, I thought that was a great feud. My yep. buddy Dylan Hell's not a fan of that feud. I think he's nuts. I think it was yeah. awesome.
Well, Dylan's nuts anyway. I mean, JB, yeah, because JBL Cena was no good. That was okay. Yeah, no, we got to go Jericho Shawn. It's not even a contest.
Okay. So now, 2009's hard because the best match on the show was Jericho versus Mysterio in a mask versus title match.
Right. And we've already used the IC belt and we've both those guys.
we've already used Jeff Hardy, so we can't use him versus play, and we've already used the world title, so we can't have the Punk match.
Cena Miz?
No, I'm not going to put the Miz on my show.
Well, it's either that or Dolph Ziggler and Great Khali.
You know what? Why not have a women's match on this show?
All right, Michelle and Melina.
Short 6-minute garbage match with the women. In and out, done.
You'd rather have Melina and Michelle McCool over the Miz. Then,
oh, absolutely. Oh, without a doubt.
Even though Cena taps him out in like less than 6 minutes, that's like a squash right there. And this is Miz. So let me just make a pitch. So 09 Miz is like still pretty good Miz. Like that's coming off Miz and Morrison.
No, Miz
yes,
is always
coming off
horrible.
Miz and Morrison.
It's,
oh, come on. That's not. You gotta get. You don't want to have Cena on the card? That's more star power for us.
That is true. That's true. That's the selling point, not the Miz.
Well,
okay,
come on, Michelle McCool. So, if it was at least a good women's match, I'd give it to you.
No, I got you. I was just trying to not be a misogynist like my good buddy JR, but it's cool. No, if you want to do Cena Miz. Yeah, to me, the only actively good thing Miz has ever been a part of was the Jerry Lawler feud. That's it.
The real world.
That's it. Jerry Lawler. That's it. So I like it. So
all right.
Ooh, so here's what we got.
Now, hold on, because I want an apology. You owe me 3 months of NWA Classics because you said we wouldn't be able to do this, and we've done it, and we still have like 12 minutes left, 13 minutes
left. Oh, you didn't say that before that.
Yeah, you were, we're not going to be able to do all of the shows.
Oh, no.
You sounded like Crusher Khrushchev's promo.
I am keeping the F out.
You had no faith. You kept the F out. No faith in our process. I told you we'd get through this. So we had a couple things we could do.
Okay. But to be fair, I thought we were actually going to discuss the matches.
Well, we can because now we got plenty of time. Dan, how much time we got left?
11:33.
Look at that. 11 minutes to talk about these matches. And we can also, I think we should build the order of the card. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea, JR. I'd be interested to see what kind of cards we can come up with.
All right, and I think we should do two nights, right? Because we have 20 matches, so we're not going to do a big 20-match card. So we're doing 2 10-match cards.
That sounds good.
And we'll have a big main event on each night. So what are the two matches you identify as the big main events? I mean, I think we got a handful of them. So maybe what we do is we have each night main evented by a big match and anchored by a big match halfway through. So the 4 big matches in my eyes are War Games, our title match, JBL, Eddie, Savage, DDP, and Jericho Shawn. So those are the 4
big matches. Yeah, I agree with all that. So War Games is going to end the show. Like, that's the big super main event.
Yep.
So that's your match, your night 2 main event, okay? And then you got to have a world title match is like the end of a show match. So that'll be Bradshaw versus Eddie will be the main event of night 1.
Yep.
Okay. I like that. And then our intermission match for night 1, we can give to Jericho versus Shawn. And for night 2, we can make it a Savage versus DDP.
Yep. I like that.
Okay, cool.
All right. So now we need hot openers each night. I mean, Ray Dean to me screams hot opener. I don't know if you prefer.
It was a hot opener,
right? So do you prefer night 1 or 2 for that? I say we get the show. I think we get the concept off with a bang. We open our whole show with that one, night 1.
I like it. And then for night 2, we're going to open up with a match that was a super hot tag:
Rick Steiner and Dick Murdoch.
Well, it could have been. I don't know. It was a dark match.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Could have been hot. It's Dick Murdoch, one of the best wrestlers of all time. Boy. Let's do Midnight Express versus the Southern Boys.
Okay, I like it.
Great.
All right, so now we cool things down a little bit. I like Wright Pillman in the slot on one of these cards.
Yeah. Let's do Brian Pillman versus Alex Wright on night two to follow up them, you know, because those are two guys that are going to keep your interest.
Yeah.
So they can follow up that hot tag. And then we'll do a tag match on night one, since we opened up with hot singles. And that's where we'll put Steiner and Murdoch versus Horner and Windham.
Okay. Down with that. All right. So next, maybe a brawling kind of, you know, we've had kind of a bland match number two on each night. So maybe a gimmicky match. So we got a few gimmicky matches. We got the hardcore with Hack and Knobs. We got the
dog collar match.
Yep, dog collar. We have the Indian strap.
And maybe like the fight between Finley and Regal.
Right. And that's something. Big. But I think we should save that.
Yeah, I would save that. You know what I like here? How about night one, Malenko Mysterio's little modern day, Jericho Shawn's modern day, Bradshaw versus Eddie's modern day. Let's go a little old school with Wahoo versus Jimmy Indian strap match.
Okay.
Okay. Now, do you think having a strap match and a bull rope match on the same card matters?
Nah.
Because they're separated, right?
And they're so loaded.
Yeah. And then the second night, we'll do Hack versus Knobs in the hardcore match, which will follow up kind of like that old school Midnight Express match and that Wright-Pillman singles match. That'll give us the right level there. I like it. So now we're on what, match four?
Yep.
And we haven't had a title match since the openers for both cards, right?
Right. So maybe we go title match here for both leading into the mid show, because both of our mid show anchor matches aren't title matches either. So that's good. So we should do title match now, and then you get the two big anchors.
We got three titles left, which are the television title, the U.S. title, and the IC title. But I want to say Finley Regal.
Yeah, I'm down with that.
So you decide. Umaga Hardy, night one or two, and Sting Gilbert, night one or two.
Sting Muda. Let's go with that night one. Get Sting on the night one card. Get the fans up and going. And cool. Then we go Jeff Umaga. Because like you said, night one has a lot of modern stuff. So I think it's good to swap that. Put that on night two. Match four. Five we already have slotted. We have Jericho Shawn night one. DDP Savage night two. We come out of the intermission. And I think we need kind of hot matches both nights. I think this is a prime spot for Cena on one of these two nights.
So you don't think we should put Cena like in a main event level?
I think this almost is. I mean, I know he's opening the second half, but that's a big slot. You're coming out of the break. You don't want to lull everyone to sleep with a kind of a dud match. And that might not be a great match, but Cena coming out hot out of the gate to squash The Miz in 5 minutes, I think keeps the crowd hot and engaged out of the break.
And the only other match I can think of that would be like really hot in terms of the crowd being excited is Valiant versus Jones. The match is going to be horrible. Don't get me wrong. It's going to be a bad match, but it's going to be exciting. And the people love them some Boogie Woogie, man. So night one, Jimmy Valiant versus Paul Jones. Night two, Cena versus Miz.
All right. So now we got a couple options. We got a couple big name guys. We got the title match still. We got tag match still, the big tag. But I think here we start to build towards our finish, meaning maybe we put our lesser level match here and then kind of build to 10.
I agree.
Okay.
So this is hard because we still have Hulk Hogan.
Right.
Hulk Hogan doesn't have to be the main event, but he has to be close to the main event.
Right, and preferably night one because War Games is going to overshadow whatever.
Right. So, okay. How about for after the dog collar, we'll go Canyon versus Saturn. Just a big spot fest. Two dudes who like to just throw moves at each other. So that'll be fun. Then we're still on night one. We only have one tag match on this night one. So let's put the tag match, Rude and Austin versus Rhodes and Windham. Are you okay with that?
Yep.
And then not your co-main event, but your match before the main event, Hogan versus Kidman. It's a baby face going over a heel at the time, because remember, Kidman was a heel. Like, I don't know who was the heel. That was like horrible Russo-esque booking, but whatever. We're going to call Hulk Hogan a face for our show, right?
Yes, obviously.
And then we'll have the world title matches 10. So night one is done. How do you want to finish up night two after that Cena-Miz match?
All right, so that leaves us with Morton Gibson. What else we got? Finley Regal, and we got
Booker T.
Booker Christian. Okay. I think Finley Regal before the main event is a good fit for that. Kind of our title match, because War Games isn't a title match. It's almost like U.S. title, very well regarded in Bash days. So I think having the U.S. title okay. next to last is almost like the main event title
plus,
match.
Plus, I'm sorry, but Booker Christian or Morton Gibson, they're not going to be able to follow that U.S. match.
Right. So we put that with War Games, and then whatever. The other one's a coin toss. Let's go Morton Gibson, then Booker Christian. I mean, I don't think it matters, so call that 7-8.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. I think we'll have to read them out. Like, let's read out both cards as they are, so the people at home, because we, you know, full disclosure, we're trying to figure out how these cards go on the air. So maybe it wasn't clear what we were doing.
Right.
But they're going to get a better taste now that we read the card out. So night one, we open up with Dean Malenko versus Rey Mysterio in a cruiserweight match. Okay. That was a killer match. Then we're going to kind of come down with a tag match. Dick Murdoch is a ring general. He's going to get the crowd interested, but it's not going to overshadow anything. So we have that tag match as number two, Steiner and Murdoch versus Horner and Windham. Then we're going to have a nasty Indian strap match. So at the very least, you're going to get to see somebody hit somebody else with some weapons. So Wahoo McDaniel versus Jimmy Garvin. Sting versus the Great Muta in a television title match. And that was a super fun match from Bash 89. And then your pre-intermission main event, Chris Jericho versus Shawn Michaels, where Jericho beats Shawn Michaels by a referee stoppage. So that's a bloody, bloody match, right? Is that the bloodbath for Jericho Michaels? It is, right?
Yeah, because Unforgiven's the strap one, where he beats the shit out of him with the belt, and he has all the welts on his back. No Mercy is the ladder. So, yeah, I think this is the bloody one.
Yeah, okay, great. Then we come back from intermission with Jimmy Valiant and Paul Jones and a really exciting, just a crowd pleaser. You know, modern-day equivalent would be like Santino, you know. But this was a serious blood feud at the time. Then Canyon versus Saturn in their spot fest match, followed by a killer old school tag with Rude and Austin versus Rhodes and Windham. Then you have your Hulk Hogan match against Billy Kidman.
Two minutes.
Oh, shoot. Then main event match night one, WWE Championship. Well, it's the big gold belt. Bull rope match, JBL versus Eddie Guerrero. Tell us about night two, JR.
All right, night two. We are opening with the Midnight Express and the Southern Boys of the U.S. Tag Team titles.
Hot Southern action.
Then we're going to Alex Wright, Brian Pillman. Keep things rolling. Another hot little singles match. Match number three. We're going to, you know, not necessarily slow things down, but we're going hardcore with Hack and Brian Knobs beating the piss out of each other with weapons for 5 minutes. We go to match four with our big IC title match, Umaga and Jeff Hardy, a fun big man, little man contest. Then we had our mid-show main event, Randy Savage and DDP in a False Count Anywhere. A lot of fun, a red-hot match. Match number six, we stay hot with the crowd because we bring John Cena out to keep them engaged, coming out of intermission. And then we go to match number seven, Canyon and Saturn, in a pretty nondescript little brawl. We stick that way with Booker T. Christian. And then we heat back up with Finley, William Regal beating the snot out of each other for the U.S. title. And we close our big, mega, Great American Bash Tour two-night event with War Games featuring the Road Warriors, Nikita Koloff, Dusty Rhodes, and Paul Ellering against Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, Lex Luger, Tully Blanchard, and J.J. Dillon.
Man, you did that. You did that great, man. Like, you should do this for a living or something.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know, man. Which card do you think's better? Man, these are both really good cards. They both have some restroom breaks. But you kind of want that. Like, I would, night one, I would definitely go to the restroom during probably that Canyon versus Saturn match.
Yeah.
And night two, by far, I'm going to the restroom during the Cena Miz match.
Right. I think night two maybe is a little stronger just because I think the two headline. I mean, Jericho Shawn's really good, and I like JBL Eddie, but I mean that's a bit of a softer main event. I mean, night two, we go War Games and Savage DDP. So I think night two, which is good. You should build. Night two should be the bigger night.
And yeah, that's but time. That is time.
Yeah. I was just going to say in the quick overtime period right now, that night one is still a show that I would pluck down hundreds of dollars to go watch.
Oh, yeah, sure. They're both great cards. No doubt about it. But now we're picking nits. And now We're going to go ahead and dive deep into our mailbag, Dan McGinn, because it's time for mail.
We're going to the party. We're going to the game. We're going to the disco. And going to cruise out, man. We're stealing people's mail. Stealing people's mail.
You've got mail.
We are going to do 7 action-packed minutes of mail, guys, and I'm going to start with Royce Murray. He writes, can you guys name a wrestler or match that seems to get a lot of love from the IWC, but you guys personally don't care for?
Anything with the Road Warriors.
Anything with Demolition.
All right, I got a big one, so I'm going to let you go first.
Well, no, you do yours first.
All right, it's not that I don't care for this match. It's just I can't get the hype behind it. And it has nothing to do with the booking and the finish. I just watch it, and I know it's supposed to be an awesome classic, and for some reason it just does not click with me. The Rock and Steve Austin at WrestleMania 17.
Really?
Yeah. I know it's a good match. I really do. I like the story. I don't even mind the heel turn. I get that it was probably the wrong decision, but that doesn't even affect the finish for me. I just can't. I don't know what it is. I don't know why it doesn't do it for me, that match. I mean, I get it. They're brawling. It's hot. The crowd loves it. They're going nuts. It's like the peak of the Attitude Era. But for some reason, something just prevents me from getting those tingly 5-star feelings that many others say it should get.
Yeah, I'm also going to go around the same era, and I'm going to say the Triple H Mick Foley series. I've softened on Mick Foley. Like, he's just not a favorite of mine, and Triple H has never been a favorite of mine. And when I rewatch those matches, they leave me empty. And when I say matches, I mean all of their matches leave me empty.
Yeah, that's a good one.
All right, next question, guys. I'm dedicating this to the Cowboy, Roger Morissette. It's actually written by the Chief. He goes, guys, who's your best fat guy? He must be over 400 pounds, and please.
Whoa,
no...
whoa. How many wrestlers are over 400 pounds?
Kevin Owens.
Well, that's what the question says. So you guys could set your own parameters, okay. But no fat shaming tonight, guys, okay?
So 400, that doesn't leave us too... I mean, how big was One Man Gang? He had to be over 400, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was pretty great, too. One Man Gang's a great answer. Plowboy Stan Frazier, who's better known as Uncle Elmer.
We call him a Guinness.
It was really fun in Memphis.
Yeah. 450 pounds was the gang. How big was he? Was he over 400?
No way. No way. Three and change.
390. He was close.
You know what? Well, Andre is... Andre was...
Yeah, Andre. Well,
fat. Andre's the best guy over 400 pounds.
Yeah.
Easily. You know? I mean, fat. I love me some fat wrestlers. You know what? There's a fat wrestler in Mexico named Super Porky. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he ever reached 400 pounds, but he is undeniably fat, and I love me some Super Porky.
You got a Super Porky just thinking about that match, about Super Porky.
You know, we do what we have to do.
He's 298 pounds, Super Porky. But he's only 5'7", though, so.
Yeah, I was about to say he's like 5'1", so it's like, you know. He's as wide as he is tall.
So I guess,
you know,
Andre, Gang, and then probably top two, right?
Yeah, I mean, if we're gonna go like, yeah, is that as fat? If the weight, it's the weight limit that kind of hurts us here.
Yeah,
you know, because there are fat guys who aren't
Sapphire.
Yeah, Dusty Rhodes is real fat. Like, you can't say Dusty Rhodes isn't a fat guy, you know, but he wasn't ever 400 pounds. So, I mean, I'm sure I'm forgetting a bunch of them. What else do we got, Dan?
Some guy that you might know well, Charles, he writes, who would most likely be caught watching a Lifetime movie and crying? Would it be Steve Austin, The Undertaker, or Stan Hansen?
I'll say Austin because he's drunk and it really touches his heart because he's hammered while he's watching it. And he starts to, it brings up memories of, you know, failed marriages that he's had. And then he starts to.
Oh, no. I figured that most Lifetime movies probably have a character named Sarah in them. And so I think The Undertaker is going to think of his ex-wife, Sarah, and cry. So there you go. The same way that Undertaker's horrible presence makes me cry in the modern day wrestling. There you go.
Johnny Sorrow, we mentioned him earlier. He writes, who are your top five wrestling man-child slash brain-damaged characters?
Are there five of them in history?
Jim Duggan.
Jim Duggan was not a man-child. I think he's he's talking about, like, Eugene and who was the
Red
guy?
Norman
the Lunatic.
And Red Rooster has some kind of mental challenge disability. Thought he was a chicken.
I don't know, man. Come on, Johnny Sorrow. What a stupid question.
I mean, Norman. Yeah, Norman, Eugene.
Who else is there? I guess, like, who's a man-child?
Jerry Lawler is a man-child, right?
Oh, he's a man who likes children.
Ralph Feinstein. No, man,
really,
man.
Really? No. Can you think of any others like that? Like...
Well, Rick Steiner was kind of like that, right? When he first started.
Rick Steiner was like that. Yes, that's a good one. Let's just say Rick Steiner's number one and move on to the next better question.
It's the next one. I'm not sure if it's any better. Matt D. writes, what sitcoms needed blading the most?
Full House.
What's wrong with Full House? Why do people always crap on Full House, man?
I'm not saying it could just use a little juice, that's all. See, you know, dude, Joey get busted open in the alcove.
The whole premise was that the guy's wife died, you know? So it starts with death. That's how the show opens up. Hey, death.
It's a dark show. Could use some blood. You see Kimmy Gibbler bust open DJ one time?
I'm going to go with Growing Pains because maybe somebody could have cut Kurt Cameron from throat to throat, you know, from ear to ear.
Yeah, you never want to see Boner bleed. That hurts.
Yeah, I'm going Growing Pains as Kurt Cameron needs some blood in his life, man.
Caroline in the City. How about that one for a random sitcom from the past?
How about Dear John with Judd Hirsch?
Single Guy with Jonathan Silverman?
I don't remember that one.
Yeah, that was their attempt to glom on Seinfeld by making him like a modern day Seinfeld or like a whatever. I don't say modern day, the new Seinfeld.
Yeah, Night Court.
Cool Buchanan. All right, Dan, what's next?
All right, last one from Jay Hinchy. What is the most underrated SummerSlam event?
I'm about to watch it for the refreshes, so my mind may change, but I like 95. I mean, I think everyone just thinks of Diesel Mabel, but I think they bounce back a little bit from a tough stretch. Like, Kid Hakushi's pretty good. Skip Barry Horowitz, pretty good. Sean Razor, ladder match, a lot of fun. I think 95 is kind of a sneaky, decent show.
I don't really know, so I'll just agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, the later ones...
Like that question would involve me doing research, and I just don't know off the top of my head. So I'll go with you, JR.
Yeah, I think 95, only because everyone remembers Diesel Mabel as the main event. And even that's not awful. I mean, I'll see if that my mind changes on that, but it's like 9 minutes or something. I mean, I think there's enough energy behind it. It's just that Mabel was zero threat to Diesel as a contender.
If JR says 95...
95.
Put it in the books.
Book it. That it?
That's all the time we have for this week.
All right, that means we be out, Will. Another episode in the books. A little more contentious this time around. It was a lot of fun, though.
We kept the F out of it tonight.
That's all that matters.
Good.
All right, so we'll be back in a couple weeks here with episode number 6. We'll come up with more challenges, a lot more fun. And in the meantime, of course, you can hear us elsewhere at various shows that we'll be popping up on. Next week, we have the Kevin Kelly Show main event. And, of course, also up this week is episode 2 of the Extreme Odd Couple podcast with Steve Carino, Rob Dimension, and our producer here, Dan. That'll be up as well by the time you hear this. And lots of stuff. A lot of SummerSlam material coming up as well. SummerSlam on the horizon. It's just about a month away. So, for Dan and for good old Will from Texas, I'm JT. We are out. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.